Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is the iOS Show, episode 373, recorded on August 18th, 2019. Enjoy. All right, it's time for the iOS Show, where we cover all things iOS and beyond. This episode is sponsored by Capterra. We'll talk about them in a minute, and Mint Mobile as well, and we'll talk about them soon as well. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me is Jeff Gamet from Smile. How you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing all right, and as always, this is a great way to spend the day, you know, recording an awesome show that we canceled.
Yeah. It's weird how that happens, boy. Right? Adam Christensen's also here from the MacCast. How are you doing, Adam?
I'm doing good.
I'm glad you're here. Okay.
I'd be curious to know, you know, do we have more listeners since canceling, or did like a bunch of people leave?
I think we have infinitely more listeners.
Right?
I really...
Well, it's a strategy.
Like, commitment, right?
Share it with other podcasters. Like, you need more audience? Cancel your show.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly,
and then keep doing it.
The audience engagement since we canceled has been just incredible. It's great.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Thank you, audience.
Thanks, audience. You're great. Show's still canceled, though. So the first thing we have to talk about is, let's talk about the next iPhone, the one that's coming in like a month, because we've been talking a lot about the one that's coming in like a year and also the one that's coming 2 years from now for some reason, because that's just how
we get an iPhone in a month.
World is now. Oh, yeah.
I'm not ready.
Get ready, man. It's coming. The iPhone 11 Pro, according to our friend CoinX on Twitter.
Is it going to be $5,000 like a Mac Pro or a Mac Pro?
Yeah, actually. So get ready.
Is it going to have a touch bar?
Uh-huh. The whole screen's a touch bar.
Whoa, that's radical.
I know. So he's saying the high-end iPhone, the tri-lens phone, is going to be called the iPhone 11 Pro.
So does this throw into contention that both the updates to the iPhone 10 and the iPhone XS, iPhone XS Max, we're going to have the triple lens? Is this saying it's only going to be on the back? We're back to that situation where it's like you've got to get the gigantophone if you want the best lenses.
That's kind of what it's sounding like.
That's what it sounded like to me too, and I think that's poop.
Yeah, it sucks. The what I was really hoping for, and I think what everybody wants, is a simplification of the naming again.
Yes,
please.
Yeah,
you know,
I could go for that.
Can we just have the high end? We can call it the Pro, and then we call the other one not the Pro, and then we just have the big and the small of the
in the Pro model.
Yeah,
maybe that's what's happening. I mean, maybe they're both going to be called Pro, which that actually would make the most sense, right? And then you don't have to have the 10R. It would just be the 11.
Well, that's what they're doing with the iPad. But I feel
exactly.
Like we've been talking about this concept for like 3 years.
Well, maybe this is finally them doing it.
Apple just needs to listen to us.
Well, and it's a return. It's a return back to
us canceling the show to get Apple to start listening.
Sorry, Jeff.
I'm sorry. I walked all over you.
No, I walked it. I think that was my fault.
Well, please, it's all you now.
Well, I was just going to say, like, it's the return to that, to, you know, we're slowly returning to, I guess, sort of the grid. Steve Jobs grid.
Yeah, the quadrants, the quad chart. That'd be great.
There's still little weird exceptions, but we're getting there.
I think you're right. And I'm okay with that. It's gotten kind of muddled in the Apple product world.
Mm-hmm.
So I
like it. I think consumers like it, right? It's like you have the consumer product, you have the Pro product.
Well, it's not even at this point like consumer or Pro, although maybe it never was truly that.
With the phone?
Well, I'm just saying between Pro and not Pro, it's not so much. I mean, like, we're talking about phones here. Well, maybe it makes sense with iPads you could say that Pro makes sense because you're, you know, you need the fancy pencil and all this stuff. Certainly with computers, it makes more sense, but it's really the high end and low end.
Correct. It always was that. I mean, let's be honest, in the computers and the tablets too, I think it's still that. I mean, that's a distinction as well.
Right.
It just means you're going to pay a lot of money or you're going to pay less lot of money.
Yeah.
Because let's be honest, there is no cheap.
Are you going to pay a lot or are you going to pay a lot?
Exactly.
I'm still stuck on the grid thing.
I love the grid. Everybody loves the grid.
It's okay. Here's my take on the grid now. Apple has a new 4-point grid thing going on.
Right.
And it's mobile. It's computer, so desktop and laptop, and then it's services, and then entertainment. I think that's what the new grid is.
Oh, you're saying just in terms of product mix.
Yeah, but the problem is we have this new clean grid, but in each square on that grid, it's kind of messy.
Hmm.
This new clean grid.
Well, I mean, yeah. Not so much with iPad, though, right? You've got the iPad.
iPad's been pretty cleaned up.
And the iPad
pretty
Pro.
Pretty well cleaned up, yeah.
Right? I guess you still have the Mini. I don't know how that fits. So you're right. It gets muddled right then. It's like, what's the Mini?
Oh, yeah. I forgot about the Mini. Oh, that's kind of funny. Yeah. Then we have the iPhone Jumble. And we have Apple Watch in there. Apple Watch seems to be, at least to me, relatively clean.
Well, do you want to pay less for the old one or do you want the new one?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you still have then the breakup of aluminum or stainless.
Right.
Right. Or if they change that up, then whatever else they throw into the mix.
Do they still do this? They're not currently doing the ceramic one, although I think we probably have a story to talk about later.
Yeah, we're talking about that. Right? I mean, yeah. Yeah, we've talked about it in the past too. But
so on the surface, it's a clean grid. Once you bore it down, then it gets real messy again.
Yeah. Can't overthink it.
Yeah, I think that was the point of the grid, right? Is don't overthink it, but now we're doing that.
No, I mean, like, you just can't. It's just like, how much do you want to spend is really probably the new grid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. Here's an interesting one. According to an anonymous user on the Chinese site Zihu, the next iPhone, and they're claiming to be a Foxconn factory worker. They're saying that there won't be the iPhone text on the back of the next model. It won't say iPhone on the back.
So it'll be like an iPad or a Mac.
Do iPads not have iPad on the back now?
I didn't bring mine in here with me.
Mine are in the other room. If you'd like, I'll go look real quick.
Mine says iPad, but I have an iPad Pro circa like 2 years ago.
And I have the newest iPad Pro.
I think,
and of course, there's a case on it, so I have no idea.
I think those also say iPad. Yeah. Certainly the MacBook Pros say MacBook Pro on them.
On the front.
But yeah, that's where it's
always.
But
not where the Apple logo is.
But that's where it's always said it. We're talking about removing it from the place that it, you know, classically has had it.
So they could put iPhone somewhere else on the phone? I'm making
this. Why does it matter?
Too big of a deal.
You know what, Adam? You know, this is why I have you on the show. Because I don't think it really matters. My only thing that I wanted to say about this particular rumor is, okay, number one, yeah, why does it matter? But number two, let's say it's true that this guy actually has seen iPads that or iPhones that don't say iPhone on the back. Mm-hmm. who's to say that this isn't just like factory
like, prototype?
Like they haven't just printed iPhone on it yet,
right?
At this point, or it's a prototype, like you said. That's all really I have to say about that. He also claims to that the new iPhone will be available in a new dark green color, which lines up with a previous rumor from Mac Otakara. And for what it's worth, the current iPad, just looking at photos on Apple's site, it does say iPad on the back.
Okay. Well, that shows you how much attention I pay to Apple's branding on their own products.
Me too, because guess what? I'm looking at my 15-inch MacBook Pro. It doesn't say MacBook Pro on the front.
Yeah, you might have the one model that like they removed it for a bit, and then they brought it back.
I never noticed before.
Don't you have the 2015?
Yeah, I'd have the 2015. There's like literally not even enough room really to put it there.
On the bottom bezel, it doesn't say it?
Exactly. It does not say MacBook Pro.
What? Okay.
Yeah. Weird, right?
They brought it back. It's on mine. I have the 2017.
Right. Yeah. I know it's on the current models. I've seen it.
Yeah.
I just never noticed it wasn't on my model.
Yeah. So
it's probably on my 2011.
More interestingly, I guess, is the dark green color, and that seems to carry more weight for me.
Dark green color iPhone?
Yes.
Why?
Why
would they do dark green? I guess is what I'm asking. Like product red, but they're going to do a product green.
Product green for Kermit.
Oh, okay. That I can accept. Yeah. Product green for Kermit.
Now it makes sense.
Now it
is
all
it like an
sense.
Environmental thing? Like, are they going to put it out for Earth Day? Like, you know how they always turn.
I like that.
The logo, the Apple logo and logo stores green for Earth Day or
You'll
whatever.
You'll definitely capture a demographic of goofballs with a product green for sure. Probably more
that
than
that seems like something more likely they would do. If they're going to do that color, they're going to time it with like, hey, and then a bunch of marketing around their environmental initiatives.
Yeah. All right. I'm on board with product green now. I'm not going to get it, but I think
that it would be a way for them to, again, kind of extend out sales because they know they're going to get a bump when they release the new product, right? And then haven't they always delayed the product red? So you can't get product red like day one. It's usually somewhere partway through the year.
You know?
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
And I think it's to juice sales, like to keep somewhat the sales from slowing down.
Could be.
And so doing another one, like a green... That actually might totally be a smart thing for Apple to do just in general with a lot of the products is just like come out with special editions, but not when they launch the product at various times throughout the year. Might piss people off, but.
Yeah, but it would probably goose sales.
Gotta goose those sales.
Yeah, I mean, and iPhone's at that place, right? It's a matured product that is declining slowly. And, I mean, that's what you do with mature products, right? You find other ways to make them desirable for customers.
Mm-hmm.
So, probably wouldn't be a bad idea.
Yeah, I'm on board. Product green, let's do it. Let's see. So, according to an image found in iOS 13 Beta 7 by iHelpBR, they found a screenshot of an iPhone that indicates we'll be seeing the new iPhone announced on September 10th. So, less than a month. And this is the same site that found a similar image last year. Accurately predicting the date. And the interesting thing about that image was, I believe the announcement was on a Wednesday, which is abnormal. Apple typically does their announcements on Tuesdays.
Uh-huh.
And so I guess this seems to be a relatively accurate predictor I forget what the name of the, it's like Hold for Release, I believe. Yeah, Hold for Release was the name of the image. It's interesting that they have that in the OS at all. But I think they're expecting it's going to be around 9:41, which is the typical time that they expect to drop new products during the announcements. You know how they put the time of the keynote.
That was the original iPhone, right?
Yeah, but if you look at the clock on this screenshot, it's set to
9:41. But the reason for that, right, is that was when iPhone 1 was announced.
I believe so. Yeah,
that time.
Yeah,
that exact time.
Yeah. So Tuesday the 10th. That's what we're looking at. So pretty interesting. There are also other sources that have corroborated the same idea. So there it is.
Well, that date fits.
It does.
Historically as well.
It really, historically it makes a lot of sense.
If they announce, then would we expect sales to happen pretty quickly?
I would guess a week later.
Like 2 weeks. A week or two later.
Yeah, yeah.
So like the 20th or the 27th?
Yeah.
Oh, man. It's too soon. It's too soon. Not ready. My bank account's not ready.
No kidding. Yeah, so we talked last week, Jeff and I, about the 10% import tariff on products out of China.
Mm-hmm.
And how I believe it was Ming Chi Kuo who was saying he believed Apple would find a way to not have to pass that on to consumers.
Absorb it. Yep.
Right, that they would absorb it, or that they have some other methods, manufacturing outside of China, maybe in India or something like that. However, according to the USTR, the 10% tariff on items such as cell phones, laptop computers, and monitors will be delayed until December 15th. And following that, Apple stock jumped 4.5%. I'm not entirely read on why they went with that date. And what happens then? I assume they just push it back out again, or something, or they're assuming that negotiations will have gone somewhere else.
Right.
Who knows?
Yeah, they're hoping it'll resolve.
Yes.
That they'll be able to come to some resolution.
Right.
Before then.
So that's good for consumers, especially given our conversation last week. I believe Jeff was firmly on the side of Apple's going to have to. If that were the case, they would have to pass that along to consumers somehow.
Yep.
I don't think they would.
I disagree.
Here's my take. I think they've reached price saturation on their products.
Yeah.
And I hear it from my community. You can see it in the sales numbers. Unless they just flat out don't care that... If they were to raise the pricing on this year's iPhones 10%, I think a lot of people, including myself, like I am so at the edge of like, this is ridiculous. $1,200 for an iPhone, and you're going to add another 10%. So another, what, $120?
Now, is the tariff on the full price of the product or on the components?
Well, it's on the components. So I say it goes up 5%. I don't know. I'm like at my edge. It's just like there's not a feature that they can throw in there that I'm going to be like, oh God, I need to have that.
I think that at this point, if prices change, they must go down no matter what.
Well, I could see Apple lowering the price of the product so that with the tariffs, it stays the same in the end.
You mean lowering the price by cutting costs elsewhere or
yes.
Shifting manufacturing? Yeah, I mean, that's my point is like, I don't think they're going to be able to get away with, I mean, we just, this last round had this price increase and I think consumers are still stinging from it. And I don't think they're going to accept another price increase. Like, I think it would do more damage to sales than Apple just figuring out how to absorb the costs or work around the cost increase. Like, I just don't see it getting passed to consumer in the price point of the product. That's my point.
Yeah, I can totally see that.
Like, I don't think it would go over well. I think it would damage sales more harshly than it would benefit Apple to pass that along, if that makes sense.
Yes, it does. I will stand by what I said last week, which is Apple is not going to absorb the cost. So if they keep the price the same, they will find a way to cut costs somewhere else to accommodate for that.
Sure. That makes sense. I'm totally with that. I guess, yeah, so my point is, like, I don't see that increase, those increases being passed directly to the consumer in a way that the consumer is going to recognize it. Like, the price of the iPhone is not going up. It can't.
All right, I like the way you phrase
it. It can't.
I think it literally can. I think if Apple adds $50 to the price of the iPhone, I think there's a disproportionate number of consumers that are going to just be like, that's it, I'm done. Like, I was going to upgrade this year. I've been upgrading every year. I am now not on that cycle anymore.
Oh, yeah, because, yeah.
Like, it was hard enough last year to accept it. Like, and I think a lot of people, at least what I've heard from many in my community, there were a lot of fans that begrudgingly sort of did it. But, I mean, having used my iPhone XS for the past year, I don't think that it was probably worth upgrading. You know, I'm an exception, right? Because I'm in the media, I'm talking about this stuff, so it makes sense for me to be able to have firsthand experience with it, with the new features and stuff, so that I can say things like, I don't think the upgrade from 10 to 10S was worth the price increase. I honestly don't. I don't think I could honestly tell anybody in my community, oh yeah, you should have got it because this was so much better than what you had.
Yeah.
You know, yep, I'm still on my iPhone 10, and
yeah, I don't think you missed anything. I honestly don't.
When the new models first came out, I did have a little bit of envy because, hey, you know, it's the new model. But I don't feel like I've really been missing anything now that we're a year into the phone.
Yeah. Now, this one, you know, this year's with the bump up to the tri-lens camera system, I mean, a lot of people really, really do care a lot about the camera features on their phone. So I think that's going to help a lot of people justify. I expect Apple will see a lot more upgrades this year. But again, if they were to, again, raise the price, which they might do with that Pro moniker, I am really worried they're going to be like, this one's $1,500. And I think people are going to, like, respond very negatively to that.
Yeah.
I think that's very absolutely likely. Yeah. When you're at the point where your phone costs at least as much as your laptop for a lot of people.
It's insanity.
That's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
And we're right on the edge of that. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what they do. I am a little leery that they're going to try and do this Pro thing and then, again, bump the cost in some significant way and then try and justify it with some sort of marketing reality distortion field. But I think those days are over for a lot of people.
They have to. Yeah, absolutely. They definitely are. No doubt about it. Okay. So we were talking about the tri-lens cameras, and according to Maka Takara, they believe that the next iPads Pro will have tri-lens cameras as well. So the small and the large iPad Pro will have a tri-lens similar to the Pro iPhone, and I think this, you know, speaks to what we were talking about earlier with the iPhone. If we're going to do that, it would make sense to simplify the naming conventions with the iOS devices as much as possible, and kind of have the feature set in line with each other. So it makes a lot of sense that we would see a tri-lens on the Pro. In addition to that rumor, Maka Takara also believes that the low-end iPad will have a dual-lens camera. And that's new, obviously, for iPad. According to, they also put out a render of what they believe the dual lens will look like on the iPad. They think it's going to also be a rectangle. So we have the cracker right, design.
Square.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. A square specifically. It is a rectangle.
That's true.
Specifically a square.
Mathematically correct.
Yeah. But not the pill shape as we've seen on the current iPhones, which, I guess kind of makes sense in terms of perhaps like simplification, maybe tooling and that sort of thing.
Yeah, maybe.
That probably reduces the amount of tools by, some factor that's meaningful.
If they do the 3-lens camera for the iPad Pro, it does add another differentiating factor.
Yeah, and that's kind of important right now for Apple because it's tough to see that otherwise.
Yeah, especially since Apple Pencil works across the board now.
Right. Yeah, it's like, hey, would you like to pay an extra couple $100 so that you can clip your pencil, so that you can pay more for your pencil and then clip it to the side? Well, what the hell are you talking about? Are you insane? No. I mean, like, we get it, but in a lot of ways, there's not enough differentiation between these models. And that is, again, that's the name of the game, right? To get people to pay the premium price, you have to show something that's, as tangible as possible, different.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I think that would go a long way to doing that. And yeah, I think that's a good move, especially given all of Apple's AR push and that sort of thing.
Does the AR stuff get a bump from, I would presume it gets some sort of benefit from extra cameras, right? Well, definitely from 2 cameras, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think that
possibly three,
the more depth perception the system has,
yeah, I think that's the big thing, depth.
Because I was trying to think of like all the times I've actually used the camera on my iPad, which is 0 unless it is for AR stuff. Like, I don't take pictures with my iPad. I think people do. I've seen it.
People do.
But I don't know how widespread it is. Or again, I guess it comes back to, are people really buying an iPad? Like, is part of the purchase decision how good are the cameras on the iPad? And I'd be curious to know how that factors into an iPad purchase decision. My sense is it doesn't much, but maybe I'm totally off on that. It wouldn't for me. Like, I don't look at it and go, oh yeah, I want the better cameras on my iPad.
I bet you're right. I have a feeling that people are not buying the iPad for the cameras. It just happens to have cameras, so they take
it. It's a bonus, yeah. It's an extra feature that's great. That's really nice. And they get upgraded, great. That's really nice. But I'm not walking into the Apple store going, oh my God, I need an iPad with the best possible cameras on it because that's my use case.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I could be wrong. I'm happy if people want to tell me I'm wrong, like that they can really care about that, then that's cool.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I don't use my camera either on the iPad very often. So,
do you use it for AR, though? I mean, I do play AR games on it occasionally.
No. I mean, yeah, I don't. I can't really think of any situation where I genuinely, with any regularity, use the camera on the iPad.
Yeah. But my point is that I think that's what's probably driving Apple's push forward with upgrading the cameras on the iPad more so than they have a lot of consumers who are looking for camera functionality in their iPad. It's probably more about the augmented reality games and things they want to do with the technology moving forward. So making sure that developers have a base platform across their devices that's consistent and can take advantage of the things that they want to do in that space.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's a value add. I don't think it's something that the consumers really look for. Okay, so with that, we have our sponsors to talk about, so we'll do that right after this break. Our sponsor this week is Capterra. Don't let your software search kill those summer vibes. Now you can ditch the office overtime and find options for your business in minutes with Capterra. Read hundreds of thousands of reviews and make finding the right software for your business a breeze at capterra.com/tios. Capterra is the leading free online resource to help you find the best software solution for your business. With over 950,000 reviews of products from real software users, discover everything you need to make an informed decision. Search more than 700 specific categories of software, everything from project management to email marketing to yoga studio management software. No matter what kind of software your business needs, Capterra makes it easy to discover the right solution fast. Join the millions of people who use Capterra each month to find the right tools for their business. And I'm really happy these guys are supporting Tios because I know how hard it is to find the perfect piece of software for your needs. Software I've talked about in the past, like OmniFocus, Sublime Text, and Confluence, were all discovered by word of mouth, but Capterra can help you find what you need even faster than before. Visit capterra.com/tios for free today to find the tools to make an informed software decision for your business. capterra.com/tios. Capterra, that's CAPTERRA.com/tios. We thank them so much for their support of the iOS show. Our last sponsor this week is Mint Mobile. If you're still using one of the big wireless providers in 2019, have you asked yourself what you're paying for? Between expensive retail stores, inflated prices, and hidden fees, you're being taken advantage of because they know that you'll pay. Enter Mint Mobile. Mint Mobile provides the same premium network coverage you're used to, but at a fraction of the cost because everything is online. Mint Mobile saves on retail locations and overhead and then passes those savings directly on to you. And after talking with these guys, I actually really appreciate what they're doing, especially for iPhone users. They know we expect a great experience and they go out of their way to make sure it's just as easy to set up, if not easier, than the other major carriers. They also provide the same features such as visual voicemail and personal hotspot right out of the box. Mint Mobile makes it easy to cut your wireless bill down to just $15 a month. Every plan comes with unlimited nationwide talk and text. With Mint Mobile, stop paying for unlimited data that you'll never use. Choose between plans with 3, 8, and 12 gigabytes of 4G LTE data. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and keep your same phone number along with all your existing contacts. Ditch your old wireless bill and start saving with Mint Mobile. To get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month and then get the plan shipped to your door for free, go to mintmobile.com/tios. That's mintmobile.com/tios. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/TIOSS. We thank them for their support of the iOS show. All right. So with that, let's talk about the next Apple Watch. So our boy, Ming-Chi Kuo, he believes that for what it's worth, as far as the Apple Watch Series 5 that we're expecting, this fall, are we expecting it in October or September? I think it's September, right?
I'm assuming around the same time as the iPhone. New iPhone.
Yeah.
So September.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, so he's thinking that they're going to be gradually shifting production of the OLED displays to Japan Display, starting with 15% to 20%. Of the OLED displays coming from them this year, up to 70% to 80% in 2021. So Apple diversifying their display manufacturing. But the more interesting bit of information kind of is a corroboration of a previous rumor from Ming-Chi, which is that it looks like we're going to be seeing a ceramic case on the next Apple Watch, which is pretty impressive. We originally had the gold Apple Watch and it accounted for like a 0.5% or something like that. And so they eventually got rid of the edition. Then they had the ceramic edition that was obviously cheaper than gold. And now we don't have anything like that. However, it looks like we're going to get a ceramic case again, according to something else discovered by iHelpBR in the watchOS 6 beta. They found videos of both a 44 millimeter ceramic case and a 44 millimeter titanium case. So that one's new. That's a new rumor. And this the video that we're talking about is the when you set up your Apple Watch, you get the nice little animation of the back of the case that kind of shows the rounded text that says, you know, designed in California, you know, ceramic back, et cetera, that sort of thing, and the measurement of the watch. And so we're seeing now titanium in addition to the ceramic. So we see the corroboration of the rumor plus something new. And it makes a lot of sense given Apple's recent work with the Apple Card being titanium.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like their design team is like all on the titanium again after they fell out of love with it with the PowerBook, the titanium PowerBook. And
yeah, good times. I still have fond memories of the titanium PowerBook.
That computer was both really cool looking and also very ugly.
Yeah,
it was kind okay. of it was at the yeah. same time because it was so the way that they it was very thin and they really the design of how they achieved that was very impressive and at the same time it was kind of ugly. Just given their
so new and unique
yeah.
at the time.
Yes. The uniqueness of it definitely, you know, kept you away from realizing that it was not the best looking. And of course, then they moved on to I think the hinges were really the big thing. The hinges were different then. I mean, now we have the cool integrated hinge, but yeah, so I digress. Titanium Apple Watch, I think, is a really neat idea. I believe, as far as strength to weight ratio, yes. I'm not sure about, you know, hardness. I would imagine it has to do with the type of titanium that they're, you know, what sort of, treatment, they're doing on it. But I would imagine it's going to be similar to ceramic in that, you know, ceramic is very scratch resistant. Rather brittle. I would imagine the titanium is probably going to be more expensive, especially given how difficult it is to work with. And it's certainly less brittle than the ceramic. So it might be top of the line in terms of the structure for the watch. So I like it. I think it's a cool idea.
Do we think pricing wise, Apple continues to push the sport down?
If
they're adding more at the top end, more options, do the sport and the stainless come down in price at all?
You know, are you thinking they need to goose sales somehow? Or
I don't know. I mean, honestly, from what we know from the numbers, Apple Watch continues to sell very, very well. I think they could continue the dominance if they brought the price down, especially on the bottom end. And if you have new upper end materials, does it make sense to like move the needle on the entry level of the market price point down just to get more people into Apple Watch? Because we do know too that if you do that, you tend to have a halo effect as consumers are like, next time it's like, oh yeah, I want the better one now, and I'm willing to pay for it because I've had the experience with this one and I like it.
I wasn't thinking that would be the case, but maybe.
I mean, because what's it at now? $329 or are we at $299? I don't know, even know what the entry price for Apple Watch is.
I think it's $329. That sounds right.
But is that the Series 3?
It might be.
Let's see. I'm looking it up. Because
oh, you can get a Series 3 for $229 at Walmart.
Ooh. Yeah, so
$279.
Yeah, $279 and then $399 for the 4.
How much is the 4?
$399.
Yeah, see if they could get the 4, the entry level of the Series 5 down to $249.
The Series 5? That's not going to happen. They're going to shift. They're going to. Sorry. Shut up, Siri. They're going to shift the Series 4 down, if anything.
Right.
Or are you talking about, I mean, maybe they'll keep the Series 3 around and bump it even cheaper, but I don't think they're going to do that. I don't think they would do that.
No, I'm saying if they could get the Series 5, then the new one, price point down $50 on the bottom end, and then I just don't know how they're going to slot in the new materials and where those price points are going to fall, I guess.
Yeah.
Really, the price point that I'd like to see drop is the stainless, because I think it's still too expensive.
The stainless is very expensive. You're right about that. The other thing, I mean, me personally, we haven't really heard a lot of rumors about what they're going to do with, I mean, what in the hell are they going to do? They're just going to make it a little bit faster and like, hey, it's new colors and stuff like that. This is this year's model. But I really would like to see better battery life.
You know, I'm okay with the current battery life, meaning it's not bugging me, but I'm with you. I would like to see better battery life. I would love to be able to go on a overnight trip or a weekend camping trip and able to use my Apple Watch.
That would be incredible. Or make it, you know, through. I mean, I can make it through a day now. I've been doing some tweaks. Jeff and I have been talking offline about my battery life issues. I have a brand new Series 4.
Mm-hmm.
And
is it cellular?
Yeah, but I barely ever use the cellular capability. I haven't even been really using
it. Is the cellular capability on, or is it totally disabled?
It's not totally disabled.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's tough to make it through a whole day if I wake up at like 7 and go for a, you know, like a 45-minute completely untethered run.
Right.
And then, you know, use it the rest of the day. And by use it, I mean just have it on my wrist, really.
Right.
And make it through the entire day without getting to 10%.
Wow.
Yeah.
I have a feeling the cellular impacts that somewhat.
I'm sure it does, but I barely use the cellular capability.
45 minutes.
Yeah, 45 minutes. So, I mean, I guess it comes down to how they ended up thinking they were marketing it. Was it a, you can leave your phone at home all day, or is it a, it's a quick jaunt to the store?
It'd be an interesting test, like, to have your Apple Watch run untethered for a whole day and see how far you get. I would imagine not very far.
Yeah. I imagine 3 hours.
4 hours, maybe tops.
That sounds terrible. I hate that.
That would be my guess.
I dislike that idea very much.
What does Apple say? Do they have a spec on that, actually? I don't even know. Like,
that's
how
a great,
long are you going to use it on cellular?
That's a great question. There must be somewhere.
Yeah.
Where are the technical specs? I don't know.
Yeah, we'll have to
look into that.
Give an update next time or something like that.
Yeah.
Or maybe someone will know. Someone will tell us. They'll find us and tell us.
Yes, yeah, please. Great. Please do that. So we talked about Apple Watch. Here we go. We also talked last week about the Apple locking out people changing their batteries, which really was kind of a non-story. I think we agreed.
You think it's a non-story? I'm surprised,
totally,
Michael.
It's a non-story.
It's kind of a non. It literally doesn't affect anything about the phone. You can put any battery, any dumb battery in there you want, and it works just fine. It shows service. It shows a service message letting you know that like it hasn't been properly serviced in the settings. And then it just says unable to verify that the iPhone has a genuine battery. And that like impacts nothing. You can ignore that forever.
Other than, don't you think the norms will harass their repair center that's putting in non-Apple batteries.
Yeah, but the norms went to...
You didn't fix it.
They went to a mall kiosk. They went to a mall kiosk and... And you know
the
what?
The guy at the mall kiosk now has a bad life.
But you know what?
A worse life.
But you know what, Adam? This is exactly what Apple is trying to deter. Because God only knows where those batteries came from at the mall kiosk. The mall kiosk guy got the cheapest possible battery he could find. And it's very possible that one of these places will find something that is actually dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Or has diminished capacity.
I'm not denying it. I don't actually have a personally have a problem with it, but I can see where the impact would be, and I can see why places like iFixit are irate about this kind of stuff.
Well, yeah, that's iFixit's that's their bias for sure. But I mean, we've talked on the show, I think previously, how I once got an iPhone screen replacement because it was cheaper from some third party, and I've dropped phones constantly, all the time, and the screens are pretty darn resilient unless you have like a real impact. And what is like the screen that I got from these folks was so incredibly brittle. It, we dropped it from like a few inches on its back and the screen just gave up immediately. And it's because it's a non-genuine display, non-genuine, cover glass or what have you. And having that sort of issue, on a battery is it's actually dangerous. If you're on a plane with one of these crappy bottom of the barrel batteries, you could have a fire, and we all know how that goes. So not only is this something to protect consumers, it also protects Apple's like bottom line significantly. If they had a situation where they had a Samsung problem with an iPhone battery exploding. So there are a lot of issues with that. And honestly, if I've considered replacing the battery in my phone a couple different times, and really I would either only go to Apple or potentially to iFixit, because I feel like I can trust their battery sourcing.
But iFixit is not going to be able to get rid of that message, right? And I think that's the point, is like, even if iFixit is sourcing batteries from Apple, this still happens.
Yeah, because right? there's a pairing of the electronics with the phone. And yeah, so there is that one thing, and I can see why iFixit's maybe a little bit peeved about it. So as far as, why...
Yeah, but that's not locking out third-party battery replacements.
Correct. That's correct.
And that's the crappy part about the whole story, because that's how it's been presented all along, and it's patently wrong.
Well, I mean, to be fair, right now what we're doing is defending Apple just to defend them.
Well, no, I'm not defending Apple in this case, because I totally get why people are pissed off.
People like iFixit who go to great lengths to get, genuine batteries.
Yeah, but what they're doing is completely misrepresenting what's actually happening here. And the public, they're not going out and doing their own research to see what's really going on. So all they're seeing is, Apple's being the big bad company, and they're just locking us out of doing anything with our phones, and screw them. And in some cases, that's a totally valid perspective. But in this case, no, Apple is not locking them out from anyone out from getting a third-party replacement battery in their iPhone. They just don't have some of the features that go along with having an Apple battery. That's not locking people out. That's just kind of a crappy user experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I did find the Apple Watch battery thing, by the way. According to Apple, with a Series 4, you should be able to get 5 hours of workout with GPS and LTE.
Well, that's intense.
Yep.
I'm not doing that.
I know.
I just want like standby.
If you talk on it, though, you can only talk for an hour.
Well, yeah, because the transceiving is just epically battery draining.
5 hours. It'd be interesting to see. I mean, what is considered a workout, though? That's what I'm curious about, too. Like, if you have just your GPS and your LTE on, I mean, technically, I'm assuming they mean you've actually, like, turned on the workout app,
yes,
right? You said,
yes,
I've started a workout versus it just tracking your normal movement through the day.
Yeah, there's two levels of tracking. There's the intermittent slash accelerometer based tracking, and then there's the optical constant tracking. And that's actually something that you can turn off, so that, you know, if you feel confident enough in how the Apple Watch approximates the way that you your heart rate responds to various forms of activity, and it does a pretty good job, you can just turn off the optical tracking. And the same idea goes for GPS, in that it's when you're not doing a workout, it doesn't do, it's an intermittent update sort of thing. Very, very intermittent, because, you know, you're talking to space. And as opposed to doing a true workout, and that tracks you the entire time.
Yeah. I don't know. I know with my Series 2, which doesn't have GPS or doesn't have cellular, doesn't have GPS either, right? I'd have to go back and double check that. I don't think it does.
I can't even remember.
Yeah. I can easily, but I'm not doing, you know, a 45-minute workout every day. I can easily go a day and a half, sometimes 2 days without, before I get to 10%.
Yeah. That's, I don't know. I've talked to a lot of people who say that, and it's just hard for me to believe that it's just a matter of my friends being lazy. You know, I feel like there's got to be an app that I'm using that's causing me to experience a bad time. You know, because I actually, you know, I have friends who do, you know, I do the activity sharing, and I know
I do have GPS, so that's good.
What my friends are doing, and they're not just sitting around all day.
Right.
So
Yeah,
I don't know. It's hard
probably
to say.
Probably has a lot. I don't know what you're using your Apple Watch for either. Like, one thing that I did do a long time ago was, like, disable. I used to have it set up where, like, every notification I got on my iPhone, I also got on my watch.
That's
and
insane.
I changed that a long
That's
time
insane.
Ago.
I don't do that.
Yeah. One, it's annoying. And two, I think it was eating a lot of battery. It's causing the watch to wake up a lot throughout the day.
Yeah, I got rid of the MLB app on my phone, which is widely known as being a real poorly designed app. So we'll see. We'll see. Let's talk about betas and a couple other random things, and then we'll get out of here. So Apple released the 7th beta of the tvOS 13 to developers, and they also dropped the public beta update. Of course, the tvOS 13 brings, you know, multi-user support, the new home screen, PS4, Xbox controller support, control center, etc. Really no new features seen there. It's just kind of bug fixes, which is, you know, everybody needs the bug fixes. They also seeded the 7th beta of watchOS 6, which the big feature, of course, with watchOS 6 is the dedicated app store. So you can install apps without your iPhone. Has the new calculator, the noise app, voice memos, audiobooks, etc. Again, bug fixes seen there. And then the 7th betas of iOS 13 and iPadOS to developers and public beta testers as well. Of course, you have all the crazy stuff in iPadOS. Dark mode, Find My app, revamped photos apps, new privacy features, street level view for maps, and all that good stuff. As far as what we've seen in iOS 13 beta 7, they're not really big features. It's really, so we talked last week, I believe this, it's only been a week since we've seen another one of these. The folder backgrounds are gray again, where the changes from the previous beta have been reverted. The dark mode control center widget has been tweaked with some additional, they tweaked the text, so instead of light appearance and dark appearance, it says dark mode and light mode. You can delete attachments and messages again by doing a 3D touch. You can block, do other options for blocking senders and mail. Silencing unknown callers has some new text. The Find My app now has a little link to help a friend. So if you have a friend who, you know, they lost their phone and you want to let them find their phone, it'll open iCloud.com so they can log in and find their devices from the iPhone. And I think that's definitely a new feature, because previously, if you were to try to get to iCloud.com on your iOS device, it would be like, nah, dude, you have to use settings.
Yep.
So that's pretty nice. And yeah, and then bug fixes. So, excuse me, it looks like we're going to be seeing, you know, a GM soon. Which is kind of crazy. Hey, it seems like only yesterday.
Is there any word on how the betas are handling iCloud data? Excuse me. Because, you know, for a while, the thing was, if you're running the beta, disconnect it from your main iCloud account because you're going to lose data.
I haven't lost data. So I've been, you know, living dangerously with the beta and using my own iCloud account.
And I'm still running the beta just on my iPad mini. And usually at this point, I will have been running the developer beta on my iPad Pro for a while. I've just been gun shy with this one.
Yeah, I mean, rightfully so. You don't want to...
I've been lazy.
Yeah, that's also an option.
I haven't done it yet.
Yeah. Well, it's fun. I love it on the iPad. It's awesome. But it's been good for me. I use it all the time. So check it out. And then here, finally, this story is pretty interesting. So our boy, Gene Munster, remember him? He's been running yearly tests of voice assistants for the last couple of years, where he asks Alexa, Google, and S-Lady 800 different questions and compares the results. So there are various categories. There's local, commerce, navigation, information, and command. So examples are for local, you know, where's the nearest coffee shop, commerce, order me more paper towels, navigation, how do I get to uptown on the bus, information, when did who did the twins play tonight, and then command, remind me to call Jerome at 2 p.m. today. And so Siri has bumped up. It used to be third out of three, which is not good. Now it's second, with Alexa being third. And Google Assistant.
Hasn't it been second for a couple years now?
I don't think so. I think it's been third.
I think it's been...
Oh, you know, you may be right.
Google, Siri, Alexa for at least a couple years.
You might be right. Yeah, Alexa last year was 61%. And Siri was, I believe, 79%. So you're right. You're right. It's been second. So it's improved. The story isn't that it's jumped. It's just improved from 79 to 83% of questions. But Google's just kicking butt at 92.9.
Mm-hmm. This is no surprise.
Yeah.
To Google.
Yeah, well, I mean, Google just has so much neural net data to pull from. It's just sad.
Yes.
So, you know what? Good for the S lady. She's moving on up.
Here's the other thing I find interesting about this is that S lady is generally perceived as the worst of the voice assistants, and an A-Lady is perceived as significantly better. Yet in this testing, A-Lady is consistently lower than S-Lady.
Yeah, and it's hard for people to really believe this, and I'm kind of curious to know if there's some kind of weird bias with the questions, but I'm sure it's possible to look into the data, you know, exactly what questions there are. And honestly, 800 questions, I don't know how much more thorough you can be with this. The one category that S-Lady beats out the other two is with command.
Oh, right.
Which makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
But it, you know, makes me sad when I hear people talking about Siri and they're like, hey, I don't think I can even make Siri, you know, set an alarm. I think it's that bad. And I'm like, you are insane.
Have you tried it?
Yeah, have you tried
it?
Because it's been able to do that forever. But, yeah. Okay. You guys ready to move on to picks? Get out of here?
Sure.
All right. Adam, you go first.
All right. I'm going to pick one that I've probably picked before, but it was probably if I did a very, very long time ago. So recently I've been wanting to jump back in and kind of hone up and get better on my vanilla JavaScript skills.
Okay.
And I wanted to be able to do it on my iPad. I was playing around with some demos and looking at some stuff on CodePen and stuff like that. I wanted to be able to like do split screen with Safari and work on my iPad. And an app that I've had for a long, long time that I originally got because it allows you to do PHP development locally on your iPad is something called Draft Code. But obviously being vanilla JavaScript and just JavaScript stuff, it's a great tool for that as well. You can do HTML, JavaScript, CSS, all that kind of stuff. You can even do MySQL databases. It has PHP MyAdmin built into it, so you can connect to a local copy of like a SQLite database and work with databases and stuff like that too. So it's probably, if you're doing PHP, kind of standard like LAMP stack kind of development, it is a really great app to have on your iPad. And again, what I like about it is all this stuff is installed locally within the app. So it has a built-in web server. It has a built-in stuff. So when you preview things, you can just like run totally offline, disconnected and stuff like that. So it has features for that, including if you're a WordPress developer, you can also install WordPress into it. Again, you're locked into the app because of the whole sandboxing thing, but it's all there in that one app. So it's kind of good for prototyping and learning and messing around with stuff. I don't know. I'm sure there's ways you could probably adapt it into a workflow to kind of do production stuff. Yeah, I think it does have, I'm trying to remember, because I haven't used it in a while. I do think it does have FTP capabilities. So if you wanted to push code up, it doesn't have like get integration, although there's another app that they recommend that you can integrate with through the document system in iOS if you want to do like get pushes and pulls and clones and stuff like that. There's a get app for iOS that I'm blanking on what it is. Let me see if I can find it. It's on their help page. But overall, this is a great app if you're just doing development work and you want to work on the iPad. It's got code highlighting, all that kind of fun stuff. So, and again, it's mainly focused on HTML, JavaScript, and PHP. If you're outside of that, if you're using other languages, like it's not going to be something for Python. I mean, you can, of course, code whatever you want in it, but it's specifically tailored for PHP, JavaScript, and HTML.
Nice.
So, yeah.
How much is it? How much it was?
It's a good question. I bought it a long, long time ago.
$10.
Considering I haven't bought it, I can look it up.
It's $10.
$9.99.
Yeah, and I think there might be an in-app purchase if you want PHP MyAdmin like for another $5 or something like that. I can't remember.
PHP 7 runtime.
Yep. Oh, yeah, if you want to get PHP, that's it. There's an in-app purchase. So it's by default, I think, PHP 5.6 if you want PHP 7. There's an in-app purchase, but it's like $5. I mean, if you're developing stuff and you want to work on your iPad, it's well worth $15. It's worth $20. It's probably worth $50. Like, it's one of these things where if you find it useful, you're going to get the value out of it. Yeah, and the get client is called Working Copy. So if you're interested in that, that's another, I guess, side pick.
Neat. Ooh, yeah. Yeah, that's nice. All right. Jeff, what's your pick?
Well, it seems like we're kind of on a more tech theme today. My pick is the Siri Shortcuts Field Guide from Max Sparky, David Sparks.
Mm.
And I'm picking this because iOS 13 is rolling out soon, and there's a lot you can do with automation on the iPhone and iPad. So why not hone your automation skills a little bit in time for the launch? And David, the stuff he does is so great.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, his field guides are awesome. His, everything he's doing, it's just great. So a course like this one, it's $29, flat fee, and you just have unlimited access to it. When he does updates, you're going to get the updates to the course. It's great stuff.
Beautiful. Yeah, you know, it's interesting we're doing this this pattern here, because my pick is also kind of a developer-y sort of tool. It's called Pass Slot. You guys familiar with this?
Nope.
So this, if you've ever wanted to make your own passbook passes, and you don't want to get a developer account, you don't want to mess with all the overhead, you just want to, you feel like it should be so much easier than Apple makes it. Like maybe you, one great example for me was, you know, I got some tickets for a Cubs game, and it was through the MLB Park app, and it's just god awful. And it doesn't allow you to do a mobile pass, which is like, how? This is, it's 2019. How is it not possible to do a pass? You have to open it up and do all this stuff, and it's just irritating. And if you're like me, you want to have as many of your passes as possible in Passbook, because that's kind of the idea. And yeah. So Pass Slot will let you make your own passes. And if you're doing it for personal use, where you're basically, it's a very limited number of passes that you're making, it's free. It doesn't really, I don't know what the exact limitations are.
1,000 passes, 1 pass type ID. I don't know what a pass type ID is, though.
I couldn't tell you. I think it's something important for actual distribution of passes. So if you're just doing it yourself, it doesn't matter. So I've been able to, make all kinds of cool passes, using this very easily. So there's a wizard that lets you, make templates. So you say, okay, well, you know, what kind of pass type? Oh, maybe the pass type ID, I think that relates to...
So like you said, it goes to your developer account, so it's all for generating the certificate, the signing certificate.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, so you can... But if you're just using the pass slot certificate, then you're good. So if you're just using it for yourself. So they have pass ID types of generic, boarding pass, event ticket, store card, coupon. And then I don't know, I haven't really messed with the other ones. They're development certificates also. But yeah. So these are testing certificates. I've only messed with the testing certificates, and really that's been all I need. And then pass style, coupon, store card, boarding pass, event ticket, and generic. You can, you know, it has auto push. So, you know, as you go through and update things, maybe you fix something on whatever pass, it automatically updates on your phone. The wizard lets you, so like maybe you have a card for Walgreens that works really well, but you also want to do Rite Aid and they don't have a card and you just kind of want to model it off of the Walgreens one. You can download the Walgreens one pass to your computer and then scrape out the XML and all that, and then use it as a template for the other one. And you just paste it in and then you do your tweaks. and do all that stuff, and you know, easily make you know, variables where you tweak the you know, whatever kind of name or you know, barcode or what have you. There's a lot of really cool stuff that this thing lets you do. It's great for personal use, and in the end, you get a pass on your watch and your phone.
So that's cool.
Yeah. So check it out. It's called Pass Slot, PASSSLOT. So there's three S's there. PassSlot.com. And it's free. And if you want to do, like, you actually want to distribute passes using this, that's kind of the idea. You can actually, like, pay to have that done as well. Check it out. You can find all of our picks in the show notes at theiosshow.com. Review the show in iTunes, tell a friend, leave some stars. Feedback at theiosshow.com is the address to which you can send your questions, comments, and feedback. You can also comment on the episodes on the show pages. We have a little comment section where we interact with people. Our sponsors this week were Captera, captera.com/Tios, and Mint Mobile at mintmobile.com/Tios. All of our ads are handled by Backbeat Media at backbeatmedia.com. Adam Christensen's at Mac, at the MacCast, MacCast.com, and at MacCast on Twitter. Thanks for being here, Adam.
Hey, cool. It was fun.
Yeah. Glad to have you around again. And Jeff Gamet is at Smile, smilesoftware.com, and at jgamet on Twitter. Thanks for being here, Jeff.
It's always awesome. I have fun with you guys every week.
Yeah, me too. And I'm at Michael Johnston on Twitter. And with that, we'll see you next time on The iOS Show.
An iPod. A phone. And an internet.
How are we going to communicate this?
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do?
Oh, a stylus, right?